Z89.3, Ahu's Hit Music, and the voice of Western Pima County, SZA and Kill Bill, started off the 3 o'clock hour musically on this TGI Friday. Sean and
Rebecca Jane.
And
Ranger Kate.
Ranger Kate is joining us for another wonderful, fun-filled, fantastic edition of Ranger Talk with Ranger Kate, sponsored by Ahu District Chamber of Commerce. Thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here. I loved all the adjectives that you just streamed together right there. That was great.
Well, you know, that's the way I roll. All right, so as we like to start off, what are some of the fantastic updates of all the excitement going on out at Oregon Pipe Cactus National Monument?
We got a few things happening.
I hear you're busy.
It definitely is, yes. It is the busy season for good reason, and I'll get to that in a sec. Okay. But tomorrow night on Friday, over here at CalPi, we're going to be pulling out the telescopes during the Loveworks Festival. We're really excited about that and pointing out some planets and star clusters starting at 7 p.m. and going till 8. So if you like looking at the dark sky, that's a great time to come around and peek through the scope.
Yeah.
We're also going to be there on Saturday, too, doing a booth. So pop on by the booth, say hello, get to meet some rangers. Good times.
And look at the sun.
Yes, we have the solar scopes. We're just going to stare straight at the sun all day long.
I just remember my mom saying, don't ever stare at the sun. And now we're telling people to do it.
We encourage it. We highly encourage it. No, we don't. Unless through a scope.
I'm sure there's a special device that we're using, you're using for that. Absolutely. It's kind of like back, I remember as a kid, don't sit too close to the TV, and now they have the virtual reality things right stuck to your head. Yeah. So everything we grew up with is becoming a lot. That's just kind of scary. All right, what else you got?
So we also have a maintenance worker position that's open until March 15th. So if anyone in Ahu is looking for the job, it's a great way to go outside, work with your hands in a very beautiful spot. And that job is posted on usajobs.gov. And if you just go to that main page and under location or remote type Ahu, Arizona, it should pop right up.
Oh, cool.
And then, of course, the most important part, it's March and it's wildflower season.
Oh, boy, they are popping up on our property like crazy.
Yeah.
Jeez.
They're everywhere.
I know, because of the great rains we had.
I know, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And they're really starting to come out. They've been starting to spring out since late February, but now the lupins along the road, poppies are everywhere along Ahu Mountain Drive. They're really coming out, so I'm looking forward to the next few weeks to see all the wildflowers. Hopefully people come down and visit, but if you do, just be careful because people are wanting to see the wildflowers, so they're doing some kind of silly things on the road. You may see someone kind of swerve off the road and be like, poppies! so just be careful, drive safe down there, and please, if you need to park somewhere kind of off the road, just please make sure you're not parking on the resources. You came down there to see those beautiful wildflowers, don't park on top of them.
Let somebody else enjoy them, right?
That's it.
Exactly. All right, fantastic. All right, and we're going to be focusing on invasive plants.
Got the horror music? Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's your favorite.
Absolutely. Invasive plants. So you'd be kind of looking forward to that. So we're going to get into that here in the next break. So stick around for that. It is Ranger Talk with Ranger Kate, sponsored by Ahu District Chamber of Commerce. Right now it's Setch. It's Baracho. It's Z89.3, Ahu's Hit Music. Z89.3, Ahu's Hit Music, and the voice of Western Pima County, Beyonce and Sweet Dreams. Sean and
Rebecca Jane.
Along with
Ranger Kate.
Ranger Kate, as it is Ranger Talk, sponsored by Ahu District Chamber of Commerce. All right, invasive plants.
Yes.
What is an invasive species anyways, and who are these invaders?
That sound effect is just going to kill me every time.
I'll try not to distract you too much.
That's fine. Keep playing it. Just keep playing it. But anyways, to answer that question, you know, it's an excellent question because throughout history, humans have been traveling the world and they brought plants and animals with them all around them, you know, usually intentionally, sometimes unintentionally. Like you hear about, you know, a box of cargo getting shipped and like a bug is in there and it just goes crazy. You know, not all of those plants that humans have been taking with them are necessarily an invasive plant, even though they may be non-native. Think of like crops like wheat, tomato, rice. Those aren't considered invasive plants. So to kind of give like a definition, so we have native and invasive. Native plants are plants that have occurred, are occurring, or will potentially naturally occur in that ecosystem. And these plants have usually grown together for hundreds, thousands of years in concert with each other. So they're well adapted to that ecosystem. So, you know, you think of the Sonoran Desert, you see a saguaro, you see an organ pipe, you see creosote, you see brittlebush, all sorts of pretty plants, including wildflowers. But an invasive plant is a little bit different. It's a species that could occupy or is occupying an area, and that's mainly due to human activities. And because the species didn't necessarily evolve in concert with all those other plants, it may cause quite a bit of decimation to that ecosystem. To kind of give you a picture of, like, you threw a mimosa tree in the middle of the Sonoran Desert, like, that mimosa tree is definitely non-native, but it may not be necessarily be considered invasive. But if all of a sudden, you know, you go back in 10 years and all you see is nothing but mimosa tree. When you have a tree forest there now. But it's taking over at that point. So it's really only when a kind of species really starts damaging that surrounding ecosystem by crowding out other organisms or altering the habitat that it really starts becoming invasive. And to give you an idea, across the United States, there's more than 6,500 kind of invasive species that are now established in the United States. So quite a few.
Wow.
And those species are really causing a bit of havoc on the ecosystems. And some of them, when I was doing my research, I was a little surprised by, because I didn't realize it was an invasive species. So I thought I'd point out some fun ones to you. Cheatgrass, for example, actually originated in Europe and came over in the 1800s as a contaminant in straw and in seed, and it's a huge fire risk. English ivy, which you can just, you know, you can go to a store and buy, it's an invasive species. It was brought over in the early 1700s as kind of a ground cover, and it's super aggressive. It just kind of takes off. It can actually kill neighboring trees by blocking out the light on the tree. It's actually considered one of the worst spread invasive species. And one of the reasons for that is because it can pretty much just grow anywhere. So it's very successful and just drowns out the other species. Have you ever been through the South? The plant that eats the South, kudzu vine, is just kind of everywhere. It's found in 32 states so far. It grows rapidly.
Oh, wow.
And it was actually introduced in 1876 as an ornamental plant and for erosion control. And then it just kind of took over. It can climb up trees with its massive weight. It can actually, like, pull plants down and topple them. And it grows really fast. It can grow thousands of acres in a year. So it's just kind of taken over. It's invading.
If it's something what I'm thinking about, because I'm from Mississippi originally, when I go back there, and you just see the stuff all over the trees and stuff, maybe that's that.
It could be.
Is that it?
It's not Spanish moss, is it? That's
Georgia.
Georgia. I'm Georgia.
Like you see in Florida, too, in these big trees, and you see these things hanging. That's not it.
I'm not sure, because I've been through Mississippi once very quickly.
Okay.
I failed you.
That's all good.
Use my ranger powers to foresee Mississippi from here.
The ranger powers. Ooh. All right. Well, okay. So in the next break, we're going to talk about impacts of invasives. Ooh. I love the sound effects. It makes it so fun.
It really does.
All right, here's Ed Sheeran. It's Bad Habits. It's Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music. You're listening to Ranger Talk with Ranger Kate. Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music, and Nail Horan and Heaven. Heard from Pedro Capo before that. Sean and
Rebecca Jane.
Along with
Ranger Kate.
And it is Ranger Talk on this Friday. It's what we do every second Friday here on Z89.3, sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. All right, so we are talking about invasive plants. So what if these plants are invading? I mean, like, what's the big deal? Why does it matter? Can't all these plants just live in peace and harmony?
No.
No. Oh, no. That was a quick answer.
The invaders do not care. No, these invasive species really rapidly take over. They're competing with these native species for moisture, sunlight, nutrients, and space. And some of them just really, really take off and can just total an area. And because of that, the overall plant diversity can be decreased. It may even become a monoculture where it's just this one plant everywhere. And kind of like that mimosa tree, that image of it just going from no plants around it to, you know, nothing but mimosa around it. There's very specific animals and other plant life even that rely on that diversity there. And as soon as you eradicate that, so does that life go. It really can affect the wildlife dependent upon those native plants. Pollinators, for example, are ones that really get affected by that. It can incredibly degrade the wildlife habitat. It can degrade the water quality. It can increase soil erosion. Aquatic invasives can actually clog waterways. And things like cheatgrass and bufflegrass, like especially in the Sonoran Desert where these plants aren't adapted to fire, these plants are. So like a fire comes through, they immediately regrow and just completely can outgrow all these other plants before they even get a chance to grow, which is one of the reasons they're such a big problem. But the fire vulnerability there, and to kind of give you an idea, I got lovely statistics here. But invasive species have contributed to the decline of 42% of U.S. endangered and threatened species. And for 18% of those species, invasive plants are the main cause of their decline.
Wow.
So one in five of those species are directly affected by invasive plants. So it can be a pretty big issue.
So what plants are causing the problems around here?
There's a bunch of them, but the four ones that we really focus on in the park, although there's many of them again, fountain grass can be a huge issue. It was introduced as an ornamental grass along the medians of roadways and in gardens. And, of course, because it's along roadways, those seeds could just fly just everywhere. And actually, along Highway 85 through Orpi, there was a bunch, and we actually were able to eradicate that in the early 1990s, which was really successful. But that one, once again, that fire vulnerability with the grass. Sahara mustard is pretty common all throughout the Southwest. It's really kind of taken on. It grows really, really well in this area. And the main one of the big problems with it is that it grows quickly in wintertime and early spring before these other plants even start shooting up. So once again, it can really crowd out these other plants and start dominating the landscape very, very easy. Tamarisk. That actually escaped cultivation in the western U.S. in the late 1800s. But if you look around washes or any place with water sources, tamarisk loves water. It's an incredibly thirsty plant, and that causes some issues. It can actually lower water tables in the area that it's growing, and it pushes out plants very easily. Tamarisk actually creates what's some may call it like a sacrificial leaf. It will actually put all the salt it absorbs into that leaf and drop it on the ground. And then over time, that ground, as those leaves start going in, increases the salt content in that ground, which can mean that it just completely pushes the other species out because they can't even can't live in that soil. And, of course, that affects that entire ecosystem.
That's crazy.
So tamarisk can be a really huge problem. And, of course, once again, for our park and kind of this area, bufflegrass is a really big one. It's native to Africa and Middle East. It grows in a lot of places around the world, and it was actually kind of introduced as a pasture grass in Texas in the early 1900s, and it loves fire. It waits for the fire to come through and just like immediately spawns again, kind of as we mentioned, those fire-loving plants. They just respawn and just choke out other plants. And then in the 1940s, it was kind of brought around the southwest USA for soil erosion and control. And kind of livestock forage. And in Mexico followed pretty quickly in the 1950s with it. So bufflegrass can really modify the habitat, and it can have some super negative effects on the animals, including birds, lizards, snakes, tortoises, and rodents. And once it establishes itself, it forms really dense stands, which can be way too thick for native species to even be able to navigate. So it is one of the most serious invasive plants for the Sonoran Desert and for our park.
Wow.
Interesting, huh?
Wow.
I'm going to Google
all these plants
that I can actually see how they look like.
See how they
look,
right?
I'm trying to picture it in my head, but it's hard.
Right.
I know. I'm like over the radio. I'm just like sending pictures.
Mental pictures.
It's a tree. Yeah. It's grass.
Well, I'm still stuck on a mimosa tree because I'm sure Rebecca's like, I think I had that drink the other day.
That's kind of a mimosa.
That's what I thought.
The tree was the umbrella. There you go. All right. Well, in the next break, we'll talk about how bad the problem is in national parks and what the National Park Service is doing about these pesky invaders, all right? So more Ranger Talk with Ranger Kate coming up here in just a few, sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. Right now, it's Jason Mraz. I feel like dancing. We're going to dance all over some salt cedar and kill it. Yeah, there you go. It's Z89.3, Ajo's hit music. Z89.3, Ajo's hit music, and the voice of Western Pima County, Halsey, and Die For Me, which is actually what we're trying to get some of these invasive plants to start doing. Sean and
Rebecca Jane.
And
Ranger Kate.
Along with you, Ranger Talk on this second Friday, sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. And, okay, so we wanted to discuss what the National Park Service is doing about these pesky invaders.
They are very, very pesky indeed.
Suited up and flamethrowers and all that. I'm picturing some sci-fi goodies going on. Maybe not.
Just a lot of manual pulling and herbicide.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that sounds like what I do on the weekend.
Pretty much what you do in the garden. Yeah, right. But just in a very, very big garden. A park, if you will. But yeah, so there's a lot going on. To kind of give you an idea of the effects of invasive species in the park, as of 2017, which is the last count I got, there were over 1.4 million acres of national park unit infested with invasive plants, so quite a bit. And only about 43,000 of those acres are controlled, which means that they're manageable, that they can be continually plucked, if you will.
Right.
So it's quite a challenge to manage all this because there's so much.
Right.
The invasive plant program was created to kind of provide technical assistance and policy guidelines for park about invasive species prevention, containment, management, and monitoring. And along with that, park staff and 17 invasive plant management teams go around and they actually work to eradicate, control these established populations. And those invasive plant management teams actually serve over 298 park units, and not just park units, but also work with non-NPS partners across the United States and its territories, which is really cool. And they work in pretty much any ecosystem available, urban and natural environments, and they target over 700 of these invasive plant species. So they have quite a breadth of what they're doing out there. And ultimately, the goals of this program are to kind of work with the parks and the different partners that they're working with to manage these invasive plant infestations, to identify and treat any new infestations out there, and to also restore those native plant communities and ecosystems. So once those other plants are out there, get back that natural ecosystem and replant as well so that those species can start coming back. And what's kind of really cool about this is that there's a lot of community engagement with this as well, because people like their plants.
Right.
And
they
like their natural areas. So they work together with youth, they work together with volunteers, these groups put in a lot, hundreds of thousands of hours every year to just like get rid of these invasive plants, restore these natural areas. Uh-huh. So it's really, really cool. To give you an idea, in 2021, 7,400 acres were treated, and about a little over 20,000 acres were inventoried for invasive plants. So, quite a few acreage, but like once again, those plants are really, really going. But not only are they treating and restoring and documenting and inventorying, but they're also putting things out like other prevention tools. They give boot brushes. If you've ever gone hiking, you might have seen a boot brush on the trail with a little sign like, brush your boots so you don't spread invasives. So they help with the distribution of prevention tools.
We're not a hiker, so we don't know about that.
right.
Remember the first time seeing one and being like, why is there a brush here? and then I read, and then I learned. But they help with tools like that, too, which is really cool. Now, in Oregon Pipe Cactus, kind of all that's going on, too. Two of the different teams come down and help with us. I believe it was the Southwest and the Lake Mead team that come and work with us. But we also get youth groups. We get volunteers who come down. And they're huge, enormous helps in, like, pulling these plants. And so, like, with Oregon Pipe specifically, the Buffelgrass is the biggest priority just because of the fire vulnerability in this area and how easily it spreads. Actually, there's buffalo grass, and it's not just Oregon pipe, but just saguaro also deals with it in a lot of other areas too. And the buffalo grass has been such a problem that the U.S. Department of Interior in 2010 kind of issued a statement that they needed to highlight a need for the war on buffalo grass. and so it was actually first documented in 1984, the first documented. So it may have been there earlier, but not found. Right. And since 1994, the NPS has been really doing quite a bit to conducting labor-intensive programs to actually remove the buffalo grass, and it's been working, which is great. But with any general species control, there's a lot of things to keep in mind. So if you discover like one of these species out there, there's a bit of a priority in kind of how it's done, and kind of thinking about, you know, how bad is this area getting affected by this species? So thinking about, you know, is this plant damaging cultural resources? Is it a public health hazard? Is it a safety hazard to folks? How does it work with the natural ecosystem there? And then especially for parks, part of our job is, you know, preserving that the landscape that was there. So is it disrupting the accurate presentation of that cultural landscape in that park? So these are all things that we think about with the species that we get here and how we prioritize, like, which ones get pulled first, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Wow.
Interesting information.
Wow. I just never would have guessed with plants. I just see a plant, I just think it belongs there. All this, it's like, I'm going to be suspect now when I see, hey, you look cute. Do you belong here? I don't know. I'm going to take everything and be like, But anyway, no, that's cool. And then coming up in the next break, we'll talk more about what managing them actually involves day to day. So we will talk more about that coming up in the next segment of Ranger Talk with Ranger Tate. Kate, not Tate. Kate. Man, I can speak.
I got an alias.
An alias. Ooh. Okay, and sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. There you go. All right, here is Mike Towers. It's Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music. Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music, and the voice of Western Pima County, Rachel Platten, and Stand By You. Heard from Gorillaz right before that. Sean and
Rebecca Jane.
That was just my keyboard thing.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So, sorry. And
Ranger Kate.
It is Ranger Talk on this second Friday, sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. And we are talking invasives and restoration. So we talked about which plants are issues and prioritized at the monument. But what does managing them actually involve day by day?
I love that soundtrack. Well, it involves quite a bit. So there are 67 plus non-native plant species that have been documented at Oregon Pipe Cactus, and 90 of these actually arrived after 2004. So they're still invading.
Wow.
It's not like they came in the 1900s.
Wow.
So that involves being out in the field quite a bit and trying to identify areas to check for invasives or going back to areas that they are known. So some areas are purposely scouted. They're going to go out there and take a look in the washes, the different canyons. And others are found and reported just by others who are out there, like putting up wildlife cameras or even visitors just out hiking. Visitors play a very important role. They can be citizen scientists where they spot an invasive species and are like, hey, this looks like that plant. You might want to go out there and check it. And that really does help in a lot of parks. So it's highly appreciated when people do that. But ultimately, whatever these places are, GPS coordinates put back, and then it's consistently having to go back and check on them. And the areas in Oregon Pipe Cactus that are prioritized for treating, it's really going by like where pronghorn habitat is. So like where are these rare animals going to be? And that's generally how that priority goes. And then there's also restoration of old roads that's happening too. But pretty much manual pulling herbicide. But with herbicide, you got to be really careful because it's a lot of species like buffalo grass will actually grow under plants. So if you're trying to spray the buffalo grass and you get the other plant, you're going to wind up killing both.
Right.
So you have to be really careful with that. And then ultimately, once those areas are treated, they wind up being monitored for years and years. The amount of many years can really just depend upon the species. I know when I worked at Sequoia National Park for meadow restorations, they would go back for like 15 years.
Oh, wow.
To just check for, I forget what the species was, but it would lay dormant for quite a while. So it was very important to just continually go back there. And then the other part of that, too, is, you know, once that area has been treated, and it is, there's a restoration process. And Oregon Pipe Cactus actually has a seed collection going for native species of plants. So they go out there and collect the seeds. Park staff, volunteers are, once again, a huge help, youth groups. And they go out there, collect these native species, and they'll look at what the area is that needs treated and try to collect seeds from plants in that area. So they know that those plants are actually residing in those areas. They're not just throwing, like, I don't know, creosote in the middle of a bunch of brittle bush. So it's really important, and it's going very, very well, which is wonderful. It's a huge, huge process. And we're very grateful to all the volunteers, all the different groups that come out and help. Arizona Conservation Corps is one of them. The different invasive plant management teams, and even just citizen scientists who go out there and, you know, look and like go, hey, that plant shouldn't be there. And they come to the visitor center, let us know, and we let the botanists know, and they go out and check and verify whether it is or not. So it's a huge help when, you know, just visitors or citizen scientists go out there and look.
So what can we do to battle these invaders?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
there's a couple things, especially right now in wildflower season. Don't pick or transport any plants that you can't identify, because you don't know if you're taking some sort of invasive somewhere else where it can spread your seeds. Cleaning your shoes and boots helps from dispersing seeds, especially along like trail conditions and things like that. Don't pack a pest if you're like out there or like traveling, for example. Just make sure, double check your suitcase that you're not carrying anything else along with it. And firewood. A lot of people don't realize that firewood can actually cause invasives to kind of start taking over an area if they're burning firewood from another area. So it's very important to actually use firewood from your kind of local area. And then if you're camping or just out walking, you know, brush off your pets, wash your vehicle, especially if you've been going down like unpaved roads or driving through grasses or brush or something like that, and even just shaking out your tent. But one of the biggest things people can do, I've repeated it multiple times, but just, you know, reporting it. If you think you see an invasive species, if you're like, that looks like London Rocket, I should let somebody know. That's a great plant name, but it shouldn't
London
be here.
wouldn't even know what that looks like.
But just especially in national parks or other places, find a ranger, somebody in that area that you can let them know that that plant is there. Get the GPS coordinates if you can, the name of the species, when and where you saw it. And if you have photos are wonderful. taking photos of the species so it can be looked at. Just people reporting invasive species it makes a huge difference. So that's definitely one of the biggest things that can be done.
All right. Coming up in the next break, we are going to, we'll talk about what we're going to talk about next month. So we'll get to that here in just a few. It is Ranger Talk, Ranger Kate and Sean and Rebecca Jake. And it's brought to you by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. Right now, it's Christina Perry. It's Evergone, which is what we want these invasive species. Evergone. See, you're picking up a theme. It's Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music. Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music. Carly C. and I Don't Even Like You before that, Gale. Sean Ann.
Rebecca Jane.
And
Ranger Kate.
And this is Ranger Talk with Ranger Kate, sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce. And wow, what? Again, another action-packed, okay, maybe not action-packed, but informative thing about, because, you know, now action-packed could come in for next month, though. Because you were talking about Indiana Jones and all the stuff and archaeology. I can't say it. Okay, I'll let you.
Archaeology.
Archaeology. There you go.
I even can say archaeology.
Well, you know, you're special. Ooh. You're special. Good job. How do you say it in Spanish?
Archaeología.
There you go. There you go.
Really close.
So on the next edition, what are we going to be diving into?
We're going to be diving into archaeology in the parks, the process of going out there and both managing and preserving these important cultural landscapes.
Wow, that's exciting.
Fascinating.
Fascinating. And as always, if you missed a portion of today's show, here in just a little bit, it will be posted at ajoradio.org. You can go back and listen to other editions of Ranger Talk. Very informative, and there's just a lot of fun.
Yes.
So archaeology is going to be the subject next month. There you go. See, I said it.
Well done.
Baby steps. Baby steps. Thanks so much, Ranger Kate, for coming in. We really appreciate it, as always. It's so much fun when you come in.
I love coming on in. Thank you for having me.
All right. Fantastic. All right. We got more with myself and Rebecca J coming up next hour, so stick around for that. All right. Right now, it's Mimi Webb. It's Red Flags. You've been listening to Ranger Talk with Ranger Kate and Sean and Rebecca J, sponsored by Ajo District Chamber of Commerce on Z89.3, Ajo's Hit Music.